In Africa, there was a presidential election in Uganda towards the end of last week, and over the weekend, the incumbent, Yoweri Museveni, was declared the winner. So if he lasts until the end of his sixth five-year term, he will have been the president of Uganda for 30 years. His main contender was Bobi Wine. There were other contenders, and Bobi Wine has cried foul, saying that the run-up to the actual poll was deeply and seriously unfair on the opposition and in the favour of government, and that the actual polling and counting was equally problematic. Dr. Greg Mills is director of the Johannesburg-based Brenthurst Foundation. Guilty as charged, Greg. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John. Well, I mean, it's not unusual for Uganda to have an election like this. In fact, it's not unusual, sadly, increasingly for Africa to have highly flawed elections. I think what is unusual about this particular event is that Bobi Wine, half the age of the president, and just to correct you, if Museveni lost his next sixth term as president, he would have been in power for a mere 40 years. One does have to ask what he's going to do in his 40th year that he couldn't do in his first couple of years, of course. But the difference this time is a man half his age, Bobi Wine, 38 to 76, really took it to the president. Uganda's median age is under 16. It's one of the youngest countries in the world, I think second only to Niger. And Bobi Wine's appeal as a reggae artist turned politician appears to be massively more so. But the results were very predictable. The results were exactly the same as the 2016 election, 60% roughly for the president, 35% for the main opposition candidate. We won't really know because the internet was turned off. Parallel voter tabulation was disturbed. The military and police were deployed en masse. In fact, they're still deployed en masse around Bobi Wine's house. No international observers were allowed, save for some from Africa. The Americans were turned away, the largest donor to the United States. It's a really, really an authoritarian election playbook. And that's the one that many Africans have learnt, many African incumbents have learnt. And I think the striking feature, finally, in all of this is that the South African government has been absolutely silent.
We'll get back to African and South African reaction in a while, but you feel that is unarguable, that the build up to the election, the switching off of the internet, the way opposition rallies were disrupted, the harassment, arresting of Bobi Wine and so on, and then the actual conduct of the election, the conduct of the counting, there is zero chance that this reflects the will of the Ugandan people.
Well, I mean, we don't know that. That's the point. We really don't know that because it was unfree and unfair. It was not transparent. The internet was turned off, as you've mentioned and I've mentioned. I mean, the British Minister for Africa, the aptly named James Duddridge, he said that he welcomed the relatively calm election. And this is an election in which more than 50 people were killed in the run-up. That every basically opposition rally that they had was routinely disturbed, normally on the grounds of COVID. It's funny that the same disturbances didn't happen with government rallies. But this has become, John, a playbook, and that's why you would have to say that the election was not free and fair. And this is a playbook that you saw in Tanzania. It's a playbook that you see in places like Rwanda. And this is because the incumbents know that African governments will close ranks around them, but they also know that the donors are very unlikely to say anything because, particularly in the case of Uganda, the strategic interests trump what happens within Uganda itself. Never mind the fact that, in fact, those strategic interests could be overturned by the implosion of the country ultimately, but because Uganda is a big contributor to the African peacekeeping mission in Somalia, is a regional stabilizer in places like South Sudan. They would rather not upset the apple cart, hence Mr. Duddridge's comment. But I think the difference here this time is that the incoming American National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, put out a comment, a tweet yesterday, where he basically said, "We've got our eyes on you, Mr. Museveni." And I suspect you're going to see a slightly different approach being taken by the Biden administration compared to the Trump one, which frankly wasn't interested in African democracy.
And then the response of South Africa, lack of criticism, response from the AU, no response at all, and there's going to be no criticism of this. And again, you know, I think you talked about the election, the African election playbook, and this is again something that happens, that as long as an election or an electoral process has a veneer of democracy, that seems to satisfy South Africa and the AU.
Well, I think it was Justice Crittler said basically only an idiot rigs an election on the election day. I mean, there's a few idiots out there. We've seen this in places like Zimbabwe. But, you know, much of the rigging happens between these electoral events, and the rigging goes deep. It's about access to finances. It's about social media access. It's about the centralization of media control. It's about the way in which you brand your opponent. And the fact that this is repeated over and over again, increasingly in African elections, and it's notable that this year you've seen the number of African democracies decline from 10 to 8, according to Freedom House, which is the most reputable and longest lasting of these types of judgments on the quality of democracy, is because the incumbents have learnt these tricks, and they know that African elections historically are about 20% less likely to be branded unfree and unfair than similar elections around the world. So they know that they can get away with it. That's why they do it. And I think that what this is not going to change at the African head of state level, but what is going to change and what should change is that oppositions have to get better organized. And I think Bobby Wine has shown the way. I mean, he ran an incredible social media campaign. He was brave almost to a fault. And oppositions across Africa have to get organized and have their own election playbook. They're democratic as opposed to authoritarian playbook, which is all about using social media. And I saw that today Musi Maimane actually said that, and it was a very good comment, he said that Twitter should remove President Museveni on the basis of what the election was, just like it removed Trump. Why should we have a double standard in this regard? And I think he's absolutely right in this regard. And that's what is going to happen. I think that increasingly Democrats will take these tools and use them to circumvent governmental controls in an age where media is in everyone's hands.
Dr. Greg Mills, thank you very much for talking to us. Director of the Johannesburg-based Brenthurst Foundation.